Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an Asian, see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prisoners will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control, and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor, and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries, and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about something like about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. And you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisoners in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
All right, time for another edition of DIY Checks, formerly known as It's My House. I'm just waiting for our board to repopulate here. But today, wealth defined. Now, we're on part five of our series of turning a liability into an asset. So today's podcast is titled Wealth Defined, Turning an Asset into a Liability into an Asset, Part Number 5. We shall be back momentarily.
I got in a huge tax situation in 2008 because my divorce was in 2005 and my accountant had gotten in cahoots. And next thing you know, my accountant died and a girl that worked for him called my lawyer and said, "We have a problem." She had found on the floor all my tax forms for 7 years signed and with the checks stapled to them. So I'm thinking, I done signed and I done stapled the checks. Well, they were cashing the checks, keeping the money, and not turning in the tax form. They took the money out of the account that matched the exact, because I wasn't watching it.
So like, you could just see $600,000
deducted.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking it's the check. Little did I know, it was some people taking the money out.
For 7 years?
for 7 years.
How much money did that?
I ended up owing $22 million.
Wow.
$22 million with the penalties. So now, wow. Listen to me, man. Me and my wife in 2008, I get the call. And the way I found out was, my lawyer called me and said, hey, man, we got a problem. You haven't paid taxes in 7 years. I said, man, what are you talking about? I paid taxes. I've been writing the checks and all this here. Oh, man. He said, this woman found your taxes in your accountant's office on the floor. Every tax check I had written and every was stapled together for 7 years, quarterly taxes, all of it. So he said, man, that's tax evasion. You can go to prison. And I said, what are we going to do? So he said, hold on, man, let me get some lawyers. So he called up some tax accountants out of Chicago. These boys was the best. And they set me down and they said, man, we got a major problem. He said, I got a friend working at the IRS. Let me take the first year. We took the first year and we sent it in. And he said, man, well, this is an old tax return. He said, man, we got a problem. He got more, but he didn't know it. And so we need a tax payment plan. So the tax payment plan was so astronomical that it was no way I could pay this. So the deal was, if you miss one payment, we come and seize all your assets and you go into jail. That was the deal. So the way I found out I was in real bad trouble was, my accountants, my former manager, lawyer, got on a conference call to discuss it. But they sent out an email with the conference call number to my assistant. But it wasn't supposed to go to me. She inadvertently gave it to me. I wasn't even supposed to be on the call. So when I logged in, they were already talking, and I just didn't announce myself. And I heard them say, nobody can live under this amount of stress. There's no way he can pay the back taxes, pay his current taxes, and his living expenses. And I heard a guy on the phone say, what are we going to do when he goes to jail? And I hung the phone up. I went upstairs. I said, Marjorie, I said, Marjorie, we got a problem. When I explained it to her, Marjorie started crying. She sat down and cried. My wife cried for 2 straight days. She said, Steve, what you going to do? I said, I'm going to go to work. I took every comedy gig in this country. I signed every contract. I went to work, man. I worked every single Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I went to every venue, the Verizon, Staples Center, MCI, Phillips. I sold out the Fox. I went everywhere. I stayed on the radio, man. I'm coming, sold out. I never missed a payment. And for 4 years in a row, I was sending $650,000 a month to the government. Plus, I had to pay my current taxes.
New taxes.
I couldn't get behind on nothing. And I was living. So I was credit cards, running them up, paying them off. And finally, man, in 2012, I sold 49% of my radio company to iHeart. I got a check, man. I got me a check. And then, so I paid the government completely off to zero. And that was the first time, man, I could breathe. And then the pay-per-view, I said, let me get out of stand-up, because my wife said, Steve, you finna be a major TV star. You're going to have to stop telling the jokes you're telling, because you're going to ruin your career. Because she saw the political correctness turning. And so she said, Steve, you can stop if you want to. I said, baby, I can't ever stop telling jokes. It's who I am. She said, well, okay, but you got to watch what you say. And all of my TV shows are sponsor-driven. The radio is sponsorship-driven. I said, man, let me get out of this, because I need time to go do more TV. And so I did one last comedy show, but I did it on pay-per-view. And little did I know, for $8, you could watch my last try. I had no idea how many people was going to tune in for that. I made a lot of money. It was the biggest single paycheck I ever made. And next thing you know, I was back. Now learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said, this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it, because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go over on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it's on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad at
cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit, and it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect, no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
Okay, my board is doing something here. Today, we're on part five, how to turn a liability into an asset. And the full title for today's podcast is Wealth Defined, turning a liability
That's what you're
saying. Into an asset. Okay, let me see if I can get this straight here.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank a three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
According to 2017 tax returns, in America, over 500,000 people made $1 million a year income. In America, 500,000 people made over $1 million a year income. Now, here's the kicker. Mount Everest, people say, oh, my gosh. You know, he reached the top of Mount Everest. Do you know how many people have done it out of 7 billion people? 4,000 only. Out of 326 million people in America, 500,000 people have made $1 million a year income. That means it's so much easier to make $1 million a year income than climb Mount Everest. And some people think $1 million a year income is such a big deal. Not anymore today in America. Now, keep this in mind. Before I get into it, I'm going to have a PDF for you, and I'm going to give you two different sides in this episode. One is going to be the logical side. I'll give you the math. The other one's going to be the emotional side, which is a part that most people struggle with. But this is a guy giving you this video, this message here. I've never lived in a house. I've always lived in an apartment. My parents got a divorce. I barely graduated from high school. I went to the U.S. Army because every counselor I had told me military is the best way for you because you can go to the Army, you can come out, be a cop or a firefighter, and you'll be set with a pension, with benefits, with all this other stuff, and you don't need to worry about everything else because schooling and success for everybody else is not going to work for somebody like you, Patrick. So I went the military route. No one in my family's ever made over six figures. We've never owned or lived in a house with a swimming pool, a backyard, nothing. We've never owned a condo that I've lived in ever, okay? So that was my life. Fast forward, the moment I figured out this formula and I trusted it, which I'm going to share with you. And by the way, this is not one of these clickbait, go on this webinar because I'm going to show you this program that for only $19.99 and you buy this program, I'm going to show you how to be a millionaire. This is free content to you, but it's going to make you millions. You'll see by the time I'm done. This formula got me a Ferrari, a Lambo, you know, Porsche, a Dawn, a Rolls Royce, a house, a 15,000 square foot. I've traveled all over the place. More importantly, family. My dad's been all over the world. I've surprised my dad and my mom in the craziest way that they couldn't even believe. And more than anything else, outside of all this other stuff, when family needed money, money's in the bank account. When I wanted to experience unique moments with people that matter to me the most, money's in the bank account. When I wanted to be able to do things when crisis happened for people in my family, I had money in the bank account. You watching this, listen to me. You will do better for the world being a millionaire than doing better for the world somebody making $30,000, $40,000 per year. You need to figure out a way how to make $1 million your income because it is that important to make that kind of money today because it's free to figure out a way to do it today. And I'm going to give it to you. Now, let me get into it. Before I do, questions, thoughts, comments, comment below. And if you haven't subscribed to the number one channel on YouTube, click on the subscribe button for entrepreneurship. Once we cross 1 million subs, we're doing our first live event with all the valuetainers around the world. Make sure you click the subscribe button and join the notification squad. Okay, so let's get right into it. So there are two areas that you need to figure out in order for you to make $1 million your income. One is the logical side that has to do with math. The other one is the emotional side that has to do with belief. We'll get into this, which is going to be some unique stuff you have not heard before, but let me explain the logic side. So here's the math side. When it comes down to coins, we have a half a dollar coin, 50 cents. We have a quarter, 25 cents, a dime, that's 10 cents, a nickel, that's 5 cents, and a penny, that's 1 cent, right? How many different combinations of coins makes up a dollar? Here's what I mean by it. If I have two 50 cent, half a dollar coins, that's $1. If I have four quarters, that's a dollar. If I have 10 dimes, that's a dollar. If I have 20 nickels, that's a dollar. If I have 50 pennies, two quarters, that's a dollar. How many combinations can I come up with to make up a dollar? You know what the number is? 293 different ways I can come up with a dollar. What's my point to you? To make $1 million your income, there's so many different ways they can break down the math to make $1 million your income. I'm going to give you examples on three different industries for you to say, okay, now I get it on what I need to do to make $1 million your income because you got to know the formula on how to make $1 million your income. So let's go over here right now, Mario, together. Let's look at the first one. The first one is just sales. So pick any product that you want to sell. You don't have to. It can be insurance. It can be any product you're selling that's a $1,000 sale. So if your average commission is $1,000, how many personal sales do you need to make in a month to make $1 million your income? The number is $1,000 is your average commission sale. You need to make 83 sales, which is $83,000 per month times 12 months. You're making roughly $1 million your income. That's if you sold everything personally. Now, you may be watching this and saying, Pat, there's no way in the world I can sell 83 of these a month. That's why you may need a team or a sales team. If you become a sales team, if that average sale that everybody sells is $1,000, if you're a sales manager and a broker, maybe the average commission by sales made by a rep to you is $250, which means $250 if the average sale to you is that the commission, you make your cut. You need 332 sales made by everybody to come up with $83,000 that becomes $1 million your income. So now, what you're solving for is what? 332 sales. How do you make 332 sales? Basic math. Either get five people that sell 66 of these products per month, either find 10 that do 33, 20 who do 16 of these, or get 40 sales rep that do 8 of these to make $1 million your income. This is any sales industry. Now let's look at real estate. Here's real estate. Say the average home you sell is $500,000. The commission that's paid to you as an agent is 6%. Your cut, the total commission is $30,000. Your cut is 70%. 70% of that $30,000 commission, because your broker keeps the 30%, that's $21,000. You need to make four of those sales per month to make $84,000 a month. Times 12 months, you'll make $1,008,000 per year. Now, you may say, well, my average home size is not $500,000. It's $250,000. No problem. You need eight sales. Well, the average home size I sell is $1 million loan. Then you need two sales. It doesn't matter. Figure out the math for yourself. If you're a broker and you have real estate agents working for you, how much total do you need to sell for you to make your 30% cut of $1 million your income? Here's what it is. If the commission's $30,000, your cut is 30%. That's $9,000 you take as a broker, which means you need 10 sales to be made. That's $90,000 for a total of $1,080,000 per year, right? So how do you break that down? Well, you need five real estate agents per month that make two sales a month for you at $500,000 to make 90 grand a month, or you need 10 real estate agents that work for you that make a sale of $500,000 per month for you to make $1,008,000 per year. The formula is there. Now, here's another one. Some of you guys that are engineers, you're on an IT firm or a consulting firm, and the average hourly is $150. This could be a law firm, this could be an IT firm, this could be a consulting firm, but the average hour that you charge, I come to you, I need you to design the software for me, you say it's gonna be around 300 hours. 300 hours times 150 hours, $150 per hour, I'm paying you $45,000. I'm just kind of giving you a math here. And $450,000, I'm giving a math to you here, right? So if the average hour is 150, your engineer that works for you, because you sold the contract, there's a lot of people that sell these contracts who don't know anything about coding or IT, they sell the contract. If the average engineer who works for you makes $75, your cut is $75, that means you need roughly 1,100 hours in a month to make $83,000 per month to make $1 million your income. So the formula you solve for is what? 1,100 hours. So 1,100 hours divided by 4 weeks is roughly 275 hours. That's 40 hours per week with seven consultants. If you have seven consultants doing 40 hours a week of you making $75 per profit on the hour, you are making $1 million your income. Do you see what I'm showing to you here? This is the mathematical formula. By the way, this is boring, but it's exciting when you get a paper and pen and you start writing out your formula. Oh my gosh. This is all I need to do to make $1 million income. What do I need to do to make $2 million or $3 million or $5 million or $10 million? That's the pure math. It's so easy to do, but this is logic. This will not get it done. I know a lot of smart, intelligent, logical people with four-year degrees who, you know, mastered calculus, pre-calculus, who have this down, but they have problems with this next part. And by the way, this is 20% of the work. This is 80%. Let's get on to the emotion side. So here's the emotion side. On the emotion side, you have multiple different areas. Let me start off with the first one here. And this is by far the biggest challenge people have, and that is belief. In order for somebody to make this kind of money, $1 million your income, you're not going to make it if you don't believe it. So you say, well, Pat, how do I get a chance to believe this? I never, in my wildest dreams, nobody in my family made this kind of money. I've not been around people that make this kind of money. How can I make this kind of money? Here's the kicker. You need to master the art of future truth. Now, what is future truth? A lot of people have a hard time with this. Let me explain. So imagine if you have a lot of doubt. You don't believe in you, right? You're like, oh, I don't know about this. You know, this is great, but me making $1 million income, I don't know about that. Yesterday, I had 60 people here in my office, and I said, what is the big deal about making $1 million income? You should have seen some people's faces. Well, I don't really know if I'll ever make it, but it's kind of cool to dream about having a big house and the cars and the freedom and a few million in the bank account, but I don't know if it's for me. That's because they don't believe in it. That's because they don't understand the concept of future truth. Let me explain to you the future truth concept. Some of you may have never heard of future truth before. Here's what it is. If you're going to lie about you, you may as well tell a big lie to yourself over and over and over again. Now, at first, it's very difficult. Let me describe this to you before you get uncomfortable. For instance, I am going to make $1 million a year income. Now, I want you to say it. Say it to me real quick. Stop. Say it. I'm going to give you a second. Say it. I am going to make $1 million a year income. Say it again. Perfect. Let me ask you, was it uncomfortable? Do you feel like you're lying to yourself, right? Sometimes people say, well, Pat, I kind of was weird. I feel like I'm lying to myself. If you say, I am amazing. I'm meant to do something big with my life. I'm the guy that's going to go out there and be the hero to my family. That's difficult for some people because they're lying. But it's a current lie, but it's not a future lie. It's a future truth. It is a current lie, but it's a future truth. You see, the more you tell a big lie to yourself over and over and over and over and over again, and eventually believe it, future truth is you're going to make $1 million your income. This is a belief system that is very difficult for most people to do because most people think every kind of lie is a bad lie. No, I'm not telling you to go lie to your wife about some things you're doing on the side or lie to your husband about what you're doing on the side. I'm telling you, tell a good lie. I'm going to make a difference in the world. And you don't believe it, but say it a million times. You're going to end up believing it. I'm meant to do something special in my life. There's no way in the world God put me on this planet to just be a regular guy. No way. The blood in here is boiling. I want to do something big with my life. This guy was put on this planet to make a difference. Say it over and over and over and over and over and over again. Convince everybody in the world. The entire time you're just trying to convince one person, and that is you. And that's the game of future truth. And for some of you that are making $4,000 a month for the last 20 years, you really need to start lying to yourself. You, I'm talking to you. You really need to start this moment, start telling a lie to yourself on how special of a human being you are. Over, and don't expect anybody else to do it. For instance, when you say, honey, I wish you would have told me more nicer things. Mom, how come you don't tell me nicer things? Dad, how come you don't tell me nicer things? Don't wait on them. Start with you. Number two, perspective. Here's what I mean by perspective. Sometimes you need to make the big small. Did you notice how I started the video and what did I say? I said, according to last year's tax returns, in America, over 500,000 people made $1 million year income. I said that. Then what did I say? Total amount of people that have climbed Mount Everest is how many? 4,000. That perspective to you made the big small. You need to do that over and over and over and over and over and over and over again until you're like, why am I thinking this is such a big deal to make $1 million your income? It is not, because you finally got perspective. You put things in perspective, and you're over and over and over and over again making a big small, 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 until eventually you're like, oh, this is not a big deal. We're going to do this as well. Number three, question everything. Everything. When your mom and dad say something and it doesn't make any sense, like, you know, it's hard to, not everybody's going to make millions. Honey, it's not us to make millions. Don't sit there and let them say it. Stop them. Listen, mom, I don't believe you. Dad, I don't want to believe you. Bro, I don't want to believe you. Dude, I'm not with you. I don't want to buy into that concept. Say it to them. Question them. Challenge them. Don't let them get away with it by saying it around you, because if you sit there and you don't question that thing, that means you bought into it. That means you believed it. You got to question the stuff you tell yourself. Stop yourself. Wait a minute. Is that even true? I don't believe you. You to yourself, I don't believe what you're saying, bro. I don't want to believe you. I'm not buying what you just said right now. Question every single thing. Why do I believe this way? Why do I think this way? Why am I wired this way? Is that thinking even right? Why do I even do this? We had a meeting last week with my staff. This is a different meeting than yesterday. Yesterday's was sales. Last week's was staff. And one of our employees, they were required, every one of them was required to read the book Principle. And if they didn't read it, some of them were going to get fired. And, you know, we had the meeting. And I know some people are, this is harsh. Look, there's a few things with me. I may look like a guy on video you like and all this other stuff. Working with me on a daily basis, the expectation and standard is here. I expect you to perform. That's the reason we create an incredible environment where people love being around. But the expectation of performance is very, very high, and the pressure is very high to perform, work, and improve. If you're the same person every 3 to 6 months, you don't need to be in this company. You need to go to a different place. So I was speaking about this, and one lady said, well, you know, in this book, what I took away from this book was the fact that I think sometimes in companies, the executives need to understand that everybody's different and not everybody, you know, does this and does that. I said, ma'am, stop. I said, did you even read the book? No, I didn't read the book. I said, why is it that the first thing you got out of the book is how you can fix everybody around you instead of how you can fix you? You see, the only way your income's going to grow is by focusing all the things that you got to do on you to improve. If you fix you, everybody else around you is going to be fine. But you got to fix you. And I asked the following question. I said, here's a question for you. I said, what's the most money you've ever made in a year? Don't say it publicly. Just think about that number. What is the most money you ever made in a year? Then I said, go back 10 years ago. How much has that income changed and why? Why? Why has that income not changed that much? If 10 years ago you were making $16 an hour, 10 years later you're making $16 an hour, why is that? Why is your market, you know, value in the marketplace the same thing? Is it everybody's fault? Is it the government's fault? Is it your boss's fault, your parents' fault, your kids' fault, your spouse's fault, or your fault? Everything here comes back to you. And it's so hard to do But you got to face the truth. You ain't going to make $1 million your income. You don't face the truth and realize the issue's right here. And the last item to cover over here, to my left, to your right, is guaranteed formula for success. If you notice, it's got a little bit of green in it and it's got a little bit of red in it because it's a combination of emotion and logic. It's the four things I always talk about. My guaranteed formula for success that is 100% proven for my life and other people I've taught. Outwork, outimprove, outlast, and outstrategize. Again, outwork, outimprove, outlast, outstrategize. What you're looking on the screen here, look at those four again. What you're looking on the screen here, which of those four things that you're looking at, the outwork, outimprove, outlast, outstrategize, which of those four things do you think comes last? Meaning you learn the latest. It's outstrategize. Why? Because that requires a lot of experience. It's like you got to go through like a general in a war, right? You got to go through so many different wars to learn different strategies and what works and what tactics works and what doesn't work. That's something you got to be working on, right? However, the other three, outwork. If a guy works 80 hours a week and you work 40 hours a week, you can't compete with that guy. If you yourself are reading 2, 3, 4 books a month and you're developing your mind and your competitor is not, and he only reads 1 or 2, and you study in industry articles and all this stuff, and they're not, you know, you're studying how to recruit CEOs, CFOs, COOs, CMOs. What is the best way to stretch this $1 million investment that I got to make this happen? Who should I talk to be part of a group or mentors and CEOs group and all these? Who should I network with? What community should I be a part of? Who's the best engineers, IT firm to hire? What are these competitors doing? What are some of the guys that are not even in my market? If you start studying those industries, somebody else isn't. It's tough to compete with you. And then outlast. Some people work 80 hours a week for a year, and that's great. But they can't work 80 hours a week for 3 years. Some work 80 hours a week for 3 years, but you work 80 hours a week for 5 years. You outlasted the guy that did 3 years or 1 year. They can't compete with you because the compounding effort favors you. So these four things that you look at on the screen require one thing, and that's discipline. And the discipline part you don't hear a lot about. That's the things people do when nobody else sees. That's when you win. Again, there's a part of this that's logical. There's a part of this that's emotional. Well, let me get to the last part here and wrap up the session here. So you got all these different things. Imagine this part here with you and I talking. Think about it this way. What if you, at the end of this video, what if you, watching this, you said, it makes sense. I'm going to apply some of this stuff, okay? I'm going to sit down and figure out my math. I'm going to do it, okay? And I'm going to sit down and question my beliefs. I'm going to sit down and talk about the future truth. I'm going to find a big lie and say it over and over and over again. By the way, I want you to tweet me your big lie on Twitter, at Patrick B. David. Tweet me your big lie. And my favorite lie, I'm going to retweet a few of them. You tweet me your biggest lie, at Patrick B. David. What is your big lie? What is your future truth? You start working on your perspective, making a big small. You start questioning everything, challenging your thinking. You face the truth. You make a game plan to outwork, outimprove, outlast, outstrategize. You start making $1 million your income. And you become one of those 500,000 people in America that make $1 million your income. You may be in another different country and you're making $1 million your income because principles are evergreen in all the countries outside of communism and socialism. What if you apply those concepts and you started improving? What if you did that? What would happen to you? What happens if you make $1 million your income? Are you better for your family? Are you better for your community? Are you better for your parents, your friends, your kids? Are you better for society? Are you better for your friends? Are you better for everybody? More importantly, are you better for you? Do you have better doctors for you? Do you live in a better community? Do you give more money to charity? Do you give more money to communities? Do you feel better about yourself? Do you wake up in the morning and once you figure out this entire formula, do you really think you can go back to being a regular person like you used to be? Do you really think you can go back and take up some of your bad habits if you make this thing a consistent thing? Now, it's easy to go back and being bad, but don't you think you're going to start living a whole different life? Is it not worth it to make a decision to do this? You see, the reality is, of everybody watching this, maybe 1% of you is actually going to apply the things we talk. Maybe 1% of everybody watching is going to apply the stuff that we're talking about. Most people are just going to go, boom, boom, they skipped. You went back to work or you went back to a whole different thing, and you'll say, I'm going to get back to this later on today and put a reminder, and you forget about it like everybody else does. A few of you are going to watch this, and you're going to say, stop everything. I'm taking a break. Hey, I need a break, 20-minute break, 30-minute break. Go grab it. If your emotions are high, start writing. Start asking. Write this whole formula. We're going to have a PDF below for you to get and start writing all this stuff. If that's you, I got two other videos for you to watch. One, 11 Skills of a Millionaire, 11 Skills Millionaires Master. You got to watch this one. And another one is how to really become a millionaire. Not how to make $1 million income, how to really become a millionaire. You need to watch How to Really Become a Millionaire, and you need to watch 11 Skills Every Millionaire Masters. You do those things and go through the PDF and start applying these concepts, 2, 3, 6, 12 months from now, not only are you not going to recognize yourself, none of your friends and family is going to start recognizing yourself, and all of a sudden you're going to send me a message on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter saying, Pat, I just crossed $1 million income. I want to ask you, how's it feel? How's it feel? Was it as hard as you thought it was going to be? It was hard, but not as hard as I thought it was going to be, and I'm making $1 million income. And by the way, I can't wait for you to do it. You, I'm talking to you, the serious one. You, I can't wait for you to do it. I can't wait for your dreams to become a reality. I can't wait for it. I cannot wait for you to experience this and tell me about it a year, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years from now. Anyways, you want the PDF, click on the link below. Questions, thoughts, comment below. And if you haven't subscribed to the channel, click on the subscribe button right here to my left. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.
Well, you're about to discover, maybe for the first time in your life, that wealth is not money, and money's not wealth. Real estate's not wealth either. Neither is gold or silver. What is wealth? I believe that wealth is one thing. Wealth is the value that you create for someone other than you. That's what wealth is. Wealth is the value that you create for someone other than you. And so the more we develop our ability to create value for other people, the more wealthy we are. And the reason I say money's not wealth, think about it like this. If you were stuck on a desert island and you had hundreds of millions of dollars in cash, what would it be worth? Nothing, right? If you're stranded there, nobody knows you're there, nobody can find you, all that money doesn't do you any good. If you're there with another person and they have food and you have water and they have no water and you have no food, then your water becomes your wealth because you can trade them some of your water for some of your food. Are y'all tracking? And so everything that we desire, we get by giving somebody else something they desire. The more value we create for other people, the more wealth we have. It's just that simple. Now, money is one of the stores of value. That's what money is. Money is a store of value, and it's also a way to transfer value. It's also a way to represent value that you've already created, right? So if you think about money as like a certification, right? Like it's a certificate that proves that you've created value for someone other than yourself, right? And so like if you go to Eddie V's and you're a nice person, right? And you say, well, I would like for y'all to serve me some food. They are going to say, okay, we'll serve you some food, but at the end, they expect you to produce proof that you serve somebody other than you. And that proof shows up in the way of money, right? Because that's all money does. Money shows people that you deserve to have somebody create value for you because you can prove you created value for someone else, right? And here's what's really cool. All of us are good at different things. So we all have different value that we can create for other people, and if we keep the value that we create to ourselves, it doesn't really do us that much good. But if we spread the value, the value that we create for other people, if we spread that around, then it becomes more valuable. Now here's what's really interesting. I can't create value for someone until I know what's valuable to that someone. So wealth creation has like a lot to do with discovery, like discovering what other people value. And if I'm going to know what other people value, then I got to know where do those values come from? Like, where do values come from? There are things you value that I don't value. There are things I value that you don't value, right? And there are things that we both value, but you might value more than me or I might value more than you. Huh. So where do our values come from? Okay, I believe the first place that values come from is past, perceived, I'm just going to do PERC, perceived voids create present pursued values. Are y'all tracking? Past perceived voids create present pursued values. What does that mean? That means if I feel like something was missing in the past, I will work in the present to fill the void that I had in the past, right? So that's why if people grow up in a place where they're in like dire hunger conditions or feast or famine, they value food like at a very high level, right? That's why people who, so for me, like, I like cars. I like them. I like cars. I grew up working on cars, right? But I grew up in a family where when I was growing up, my parents never bought a new car ever. They had seven boys. Here's what boys do. They eat you out of house and home, right? Boys can just, it's like they're a bottomless food pit, right? And I can remember, like, if I was in elementary school, if I was going to eat a sandwich, I wouldn't eat a sandwich. I'd eat two, three, or four sandwiches, right? So, but I like cars. And so we grew up with buying $50 cars, $100 cars, and then working on them and driving them until they broke down. Then we go buy another $50 car, $100 car, and we had no car payments, right? So I like cars. I used to see people with nice cars. I'm like, why do they have nice cars? We don't have nice cars, right? So that's a past perceived void in my life, right? So it became a present pursued value. Some people are like, why do you have all these expensive cars? Well, expensive is a relative term anyway. I don't even, like, that's really relative. Like, it depends on, like, what is expensive to you, right? So, but the reason I, like, have a collection of, I say a collection, I've got some very nice cars is because I like cars, because that was, for me, a past perceived void. I work out. Why do I work out? Because in the past, I've been out of shape. And in the past, my body hurt. The more out of shape I was, the more my body hurt. So that's a past perceived void that created a present pursued value. Are y'all tracking? And so a lot of times we don't even know where these things that we value came from, right? I value entrepreneurship. Why? Because in the past I used to have jobs, and they always came with a boss. And I don't know. The word boss means, like, they're going to be bossing me around. That's what, like, they're going to tell me, like, can I go? No. And I can't even finish the question, right? Can I have? No. And I don't like to have to ask for permission. I don't like permission. In fact, the best way to get me to do something is to tell me I can't do it. I'm that dude, okay? I know none of you entrepreneurs are that way, right? So you started business because you love people telling you what to do. Okay, judgment-free zone. And so I like autonomy. My parents, great parents, they weren't perfect parents by any stretch of imagination, which is why I did not become a perfect parent. Okay, so but they were great parents for me and my brothers, right? And they were very authoritarian. Like it didn't matter if I was 7 or 17. Why? The answer was always going to be the same, because I said so. Right. So I liked autonomy. So when I wasn't at home, I didn't like teachers telling me what to do at school. I didn't like my parents telling me what to do at home. So, and then I got a job, and the boss wanted to tell me, and everybody wanted to tell me what to do. And I know it's my own little weirdness going on in my mind palace, but like you got yours, I got mine, and I don't like people telling me what to do. So I want to live as autonomous. Now, I want God to tell me what to do, but I don't like humans bossing me around, okay, because their motive is suspect. God's motive is not suspect, right? Right? And that's why I don't like it when people on my team call me, oh, this is my boss. I'm not your boss. I don't even like the word boss. I don't have an outfit that matches a boss. You don't have an outfit that matches a boss. So unless we're talking about business optimization success secrets from Boss Moves, then again, that's a different story. But not bossing people around. Anyway, so y'all get it. Past perceived voids create present pursued values. But also, the second place values come from, is present, pursued, I don't think I spelled that right, pursued victories create present pursued values. So So present pursued victories, the things I'm working towards winning right now, will cause me to value that thing. And so I've got to value, I want to win. So what, because I want to win, okay, for instance, I'm going to put my son-in-law on blast. So my son-in-law, I mean, we're really, really close until we get on the golf course, and then we try to beat each other's brains out. It's great. Okay? So he wants to beat me really, really bad. I want to beat him really, really bad. And for a while, I just beat him all the time. And then, like, I lost my mojo, and then he beat me all the time. And he was sending his mom text messages like, there's a new sheriff in town. And then his mom would call me, and I'm like, is this really happening? Okay, cool. So I started working on my short game again. And so now it's like the last three tournaments we've had, we play three-round tournaments, and we have this trophy. And every time you win three rounds, you get to put your name on the trophy. No, it's not on the news. It's not on ESPN. Nobody knows but us. But we relish this victory so much, right? And so what we do, because we both want to win, is we both spend time working on our game, because present pursued victories create present values. So the things that we felt like we're missing in the past, that creates value for us. The things that we're working on winning in the present, and then the last one is future pursued, I think I spelled that right, I don't know. Pursued visions create present perceived values. So what does that mean? That means I can see an outcome down the road that is worth sacrificing right now for, so I'll sacrifice the short term on the altar of the long term. I'll sacrifice, like, my pleasure right now because I've got this vision down the road, and I'll take some time off of playing golf, and I'll take some time off of practicing my guitar. I'll take some time off from something I want to do for me. Like, okay, give you for instance. I am a foodie. If I wanted to, I could easily weigh 400, 500, 600 pounds. It would be easy. Like, I like food. You say, what kind of food? Almost all kinds. I mean, I don't like pork, and I don't like shrimp, and I don't like yucky stuff. It's disgusting. But I like to eat. And the better it is, the more of it I like to eat. I'm just keeping it real. Like, brother man can throw it down. I can fling it down. Hear me when I tell you. I mean, where are my foodies, okay? But because I have this future vision, right? Like, I've got this future vision. I've got a granddaughter. She's 3. One of the highlights of my life, my entire existence on this planet as a human, was when I got to dance with my daughter at her wedding. That was a highlight for me. Okay? So, one of my future visions that I have is to dance with my granddaughter, not at her wedding. My 3-year-old granddaughter. She's not going to get married at 3. That's not what I mean. Like, my granddaughter who is 3, when she becomes an adult, one of my objectives is to dance with her at her wedding. Well, let's say she gets married when she's 21, like my daughter did. Okay? She'll be 4 in July. So that gives me 17 more years. Well, in 17 years, I'll be, oh, snap. I'll be 79, right? You know what that tells me? That tells me, as much as I love food, and I do love it, I don't like it, y'all. Hear me when I tell you. If I'm going to eat something, I want it to taste. I don't even want to waste any time eating food that don't taste good. Okay, y'all tracking. Like, I'm the guy who, when I make spaghetti, I season the water I boil my noodles in. I'm that dude. Okay, how many of y'all tracking? Okay, now y'all know who y'all dealing with. Okay, So, just keeping it real. Okay, but because I want to dance with my granddaughter at her wedding when she gets married, I don't eat food until 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And I drink water in the morning, and I have a window to eat between 1 p.m. and 9 p.m. It opens at 1 with a protein shake, then I'll eat some snacks in between, like some carrot chips or some celery or something good with some different whatever dip I decide. I'll mix some honey mustard and some ranch, and I know that's not healthy. I don't really care. This is my vision, y'all. You do you. I'm going to do me. Okay, I know that's not the healthiest thing in the world, but it's what I do right now. So if y'all want me to do better, pray for me. Okay, so. And then I'll eat dinner. So that's but I'm going to make sure my protein shake is really, really good. And I'm going to make sure my snacks are really, really good. And I'm going to make sure when I eat dinner, oh, look at him, is really, really good. Okay, so what am I telling you? I'm telling you what I'm willing, my value comes from something that I desire that's way in the future, that's willing, that I'm willing to sacrifice right now on, right? It's too many people, they don't understand that today is yesterday's tomorrow. And they act as if the things, that the actions they take today have no consequences in the future, right? And so the definition of sacrifice is to let go of something of a lower nature so you can take a hold of something of a higher nature. And the best way for us to live our lives, it's like it's been proven, it doesn't matter whether it's in finances, whether it's in health, whether it's in relationships, it doesn't matter what arena we're talking about, sacrificing the short term on the altar of the long term always ends better than sacrificing the long term on the altar of the short term. It always does. It's just like a principle of life. Okay, so now I know when I'm looking at my particular marketplace in whatever particular niche I'm looking at, then I know what I have to do if I want to create wealth is I have to figure out how to help somebody fill their past perceived voids or how to win their present pursued victories or how to fulfill their future pursued visions. How many of y'all tracking? Okay? So now when I'm looking at somebody, I know what kind of value, how to discover what you value. Because you're gonna value one of those three things. Whatever you're working on in your life is probably gonna fit into one of those three categories. Now, wealth is the result of value creation. The better your ability to create value for someone other than yourself, the wealthier you are. And sometimes that'll show up as money. Sometimes it'll show up as real estate. Sometimes it'll show up as like hard assets like gold and silver. But or it'll show up as digital assets like Bitcoin and Ethereum. But at the end of the day, whatever you pay for with money that you earned by creating value for someone other than yourself. So the very act of entrepreneurship, by its very nature, has to be self-sacrificing if you're going to win as an entrepreneur. How many of y'all got it? Wave at me. Say, I got it. Wave at me. Okay, good. Cool. So what we're going to do is we're going to look at what God set up in Genesis chapter 1, and I call it the four levels of value. So because here's what y'all, like, here's one of the things I think we don't understand sometimes. All value is not created equally, right? What does that mean? All value is not created equally. So I can say, well, but I created this value. Yeah, but the problem is either you valued it or maybe one other person valued it. You wonder why. Like, if you're not doing well financially, I'm going to tell you why. Because the pool of people that you've decided to create value for is very small. Or the thing that you, the value that you've created for them, they value it at a very low level. Like, it's not like a big deal, right? I'm going to pay more for a car than I am for a pair of shoes. Why? That's a bigger value. Why? It can take me farther faster than a pair of shoes, right? So watch this. So like, even if I go to eat at Ocean Prime or I go to eat at Eddie V's and it costs $500 for dinner for like seven people or whatever, I value that more than I value the money, number one. But I also value it because it gives me the time that I want to spend or invest into the people that I care about the most, and I don't have to, like, I don't have to make the food, my wife doesn't have to make the food, my daughter doesn't have to make the food, my son-in-law, we can just sit down, we can go to dinner, we can pay somebody, they make all the stuff. Like, we don't have to go in the kitchen and do anything, we don't even have to open the refrigerator. It's amazing, they just keep bringing it to you. And then, you don't have to clean off the table. I mean, if you don't want to, you don't even have to put your own pepper on your food. They'll put the pepper on for you. This is amazing. And then, when you get done, you don't have to clean the table up. You don't have to wash any dishes. You just leave. What? Sign me up right now. How many of y'all checking? Like, so we have to get to the place in our lives where we realize that all value is not created equally, right? So while I'm giving you things that are not created equally, let me give you something that is created equally. Because all value is not created equally, all no's are created equally, but all yeses are not. What do I mean all no's are created equally? If you do a presentation to a potential client who does not have the wherewithal to buy your offer, and they say no, it feels the exact same as if you do a presentation to somebody who does have the wherewithal to buy your offer, and they say no. A no is 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 a no. Does that make sense? Okay. But if you talk to somebody who does not have the ability to take advantage of your offer, and you make an offer to that person, and they say yes, that's very different than when you talk to a person who has the desire to take advantage of your offer, and they say yes. They have the ability. One has the ability, one doesn't have the ability. Those are two very different yeses. All no's are created equally. All yeses are not. Why would you invest time talking to people who have neither the desire nor the willingness to buy your offer? That's why I don't do high-pressure sales. I'm just not interested in it. I don't need your money. I don't want your money. And if I got to drag you in, I'm going to have to drag you around. We would all do better if we would just realize there are already thousands, potentially tens of thousands, potentially hundreds of thousands of people, maybe even millions of people in the world who would love to purchase the value that we create if they only knew we existed. And if that were really the case, then I would be better off to spend my time to make myself findable than I am trying to find somebody to sell something to. Is what I'm saying making sense? Okay, so all value is not created equally. In Genesis chapter 1 and 2, God gave us the four levels of value. The lowest level of value is implementation. Implementation, oh, by the way, let me say this. Wealth is, it's like the value we create for other people, but here's what we have to understand about wealth. Wealth is a spiritual result. What do I mean wealth is a spiritual result? Well, let me ask you a question. Is it more spiritual for you to think about you or for you to think about someone else? Which one? Someone else. It's more spiritual for you to think about solving the problems of someone other than you. Okay? So wealth is a spiritual result. By the way, wealth is also a spiritual result because creativity is spiritual, right? And so if you're going to create value for somebody, that's also spiritual. So watch this. So the lowest level of value is implementation. What do I mean? This is like if you're creating value for other people at the implementation level, you have limited. Who's limited? Everybody tap yourself on the chest, say, I have. You've limited your ability to earn. Why? Because you're only going to make somewhere between minimum wage and about $80,000 a year. Well, that sounds kind of painful. Why? Because you're using muscles, which are a physical resource, over time, which is a limited resource. So you're literally using a physical resource over a limited resource to produce an unlimited spiritual result. No wonder you're stuck. This is why I tell people, now, if you just love mowing grass and you want to start a lawn care company, that's fine. If you just love pressure washing, you want to start a pressure washing business, that's fine. You can make money and create a limited level of wealth with a pressure washing business. You can. Or a landscape business or a janitorial service. But here's the problem. You're anchoring your income generation to time and physical labor. That is always going to pay you at the lowest possible level. Why? Because muscles are a physical resource. Time is a limited resource. Wealth is an unlimited spiritual result. Okay, what's the next level? The next level is unification. Unification, on this level, you're going to make somewhere between $40,000 a year and maybe, if you're like at a Fortune 500 or Fortune 100 company, you might make $250,000 a year. Well, that, how many of y'all know $40,000 to $250,000 is better than minimum wage to $80,000, right? That's a better window. But, I mean, do you really, and maybe you do, but do you really want a whole year to go by and you only make $250,000? I mean, that's a question we have to answer for ourselves. And for some people, the answer is like, man, if I had a year went by, I made 250, that's more than $20,000 a month. Sign me up right now. Okay, great. Sign you up right now, but probably not sign you up forever, right? Can I get a witness, right? Like, it's not a bad place to start, but it's not where we want to land. Okay, what is this? This unification on this level, the resource we use on this level is our management skills. Managing people is a higher spiritual activity than doing the thing yourself. Are y'all tracking? That's why when people get into management, they make more. This person over here, they're making tacos at Taco Bell. They're making minimum wage. This person might be a mechanic working at a Rolls-Royce dealership, or maybe a Mercedes dealership or BMW dealership. This person right here is managing Taco Bell. This person right here is a middle manager at Lockheed Martin. But the reality is, if some company is paying you $250,000 a year, they want you to know they own you. Am I telling the truth? They want you to know. They don't just want you to know they own you. They want you to know they know it. Right? And so like, if that's what you desire, that's fine. But maybe there's a way to have a level of freedom beyond that. And I believe that wealth begins to be created above this line. Wealth begins on the level of communication. Communication. On the level of communication. Now, somebody said the quality of your life will be equal to the quality of your communication. Okay? So communication, the resource you use on this level is your mouth. Now, there's a caveat. You have to have a mouth. You have to be willing to learn to use it. To do what? Create messages that move the masses. It's amazing that this, all of this, is harder than this. But to become a person who's skilled at this is harder than just doing this. What do I mean? Some people will maintain a state of physical diligence so they don't have to develop a level of verbal diligence and verbal intelligence and verbal acuity, right? I don't want to have to learn how to talk, so I'm just going to go ahead and keep on working my fingers to the bone. Well, that's one way to do it, right? Okay. Well, so communication. On this level, low end, you should make at least $100,000 a year. If you can sell cars, you can make $100,000 a year selling cars, selling insurance, right? Selling advertising. $100,000 a year, but on the high end, you might make $100 million. Why? Because you're using your mouth to deliver value. Well, Myron, what do you mean $100,000? Like, you know who these people are? These people are salespeople, right? They're also authors. They write books. Our books probably make us $400,000 a year. Just books. I wrote them once. Just get paid for them every day. What is it? It's a message communicated. It's like these words that came to my mind, and they actually came out of my mouth. Like I communicated a message that makes me hundreds of... I communicated messages. One of the books I wrote in 2006. This is 2023. That's 17 years. This book has been making me money for 17 years. We sold over 160,000 copies of this one book. Now, who could write a book? Anybody could. Who will write a book? Almost no one. Okay, so, or you might, or these people are coaches and teachers. And actors, and songwriters, and playwrights, right? Please don't let me forget this one. And YouTubers, it's crazy town. YouTube. Don't even get me started on YouTube, y'all. I might not be able to get off of it. Like YouTube, I had no idea. I've been on YouTube since 2007. I didn't even know there was a thing called turning on monetization until 2022. How many years is that? 15. I think it's 15. Ain't that 15? 15 years. I was on YouTube for 15 years. I didn't know all I had to do was click a button. They start paying me. Click a button. Like, just how long it takes to click a button. Click. Get paid. I mean, I wasn't creating new videos. I had like 40 videos on. We turned on monetization, did no new videos. The first month, didn't do any new videos, hadn't done any new videos in like 8 months, turned on monetization, and we got paid $305. And Zach's like, we made $305 last month. And I said, for what? Because somewhere along the line, I communicated a message somebody wanted to see, and Google or YouTube was able to sell an ad on that. We're talking about 100, 200, this is amazing. I looked at it yesterday. I didn't know this was going to happen, so I didn't do it for this reason. Are you all tracking? What I'm about to tell you, I did not do for the reason I'm about to tell you what happened, okay? So we started doing YouTube videos intentionally April 1st last year. I looked at it yesterday. In the last 365 days, as of yesterday, we made $289,000 that YouTube paid us. I didn't know they were going to do that. No, you don't understand. I had no idea they were going to do that. Like, that wasn't why I did it. I mean, it was a nice side benefit, right? I've never had a job where I made $280,000 in my life. Most I've ever made at a job is $30,000, ever, as a full-grown man with a family. And YouTube paid me $289,000 for turning on a camera and running my mouth. Where the camera? Turn on the camera. I got something to say. The highest level of value is imagination. It still blows my mind. The resource you use at this level is your mind and your money to make money, to create value for other people. And what happens is at this level, on the low end, you're going to make $1 million. On the high end, it could be billions. And I know that sounds crazy. There's one YouTuber. This dude has 150 million subscribers. He gets over 100 million views a month. 100 million views. If he only makes $2 a view, that's 200 million a month. Are y'all tracking? It's just the whole world that we live in is kind of insanical. It's kind of the combination of insane and maniacal put together. This, so we can fight to stay down here, and people will do it too, because this, everything you do down here is hard. But I don't know if anything's harder than thinking. Thinking is the hardest work most people never do. In fact, I believe that most people will maintain a state of physical diligence so they can maintain a state of mental laziness. They will work hard at what's not working so they don't have to think about what would work. Most people will work hard at what's not working so they won't have to think about what would work. They will maintain a state of physical diligence, like working their fingers to the bone, sweat, blood, tears, so they don't have to think about what would work, so they can maintain a state of mental laziness. Most people are so mentally lazy, it's pathetic. Now, I know what some of you are thinking. Myron, I don't know what Bible you've been reading. I did not see that in chapter 1. Okay, I'm going to read it to you. It's kind of mind-blowing. So a couple things. One is that Genesis chapter 1, I believe, if all God wanted us to know from Genesis chapter 1 was that he created everything, Genesis chapter 1 could have been Genesis chapter 1, verse 1. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. Then he starts going into all this detail. And the earth was without form and void and darkness upon the face of the deep. The Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters, and God said, let there be light. And there was light, and God saw the light, that it was good. Like, what is all that about? Well, the first thing God tells about God is not that he is love, even though he's love. It's not that he's holy, even though he's holy. The first thing that God tells us about God is not that he's omniscient or omnipresent or omnipotent, even though he is all those things. The first thing God tells us about God is that he's creative. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. What's the first thing God tells us about us? The first thing he tells us about us is that he created us in his image, which means he created us to create stuff and he made us to make stuff. What does that mean? What that means is, when God created everything, after he created everything, Genesis chapter 1, verse 1, in the beginning God created heaven and earth. After he did it, then he went back and documented the process so when we got ready to create value for someone else, we'd have a pattern. In the beginning God created the heaven and the earth. That was his intention. And the earth was without form. That word was not, used to be, it became, without form and void. So disruption always follows intention. And darkness upon the face of the deep. So when disruption comes, it comes in the form of devoidness, deformity, and darkness. Like things get broken. There's confusion. Darkness is a picture of confusion and fear and anxiety. And then the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the water. So you have this intention, and then disruption follows your intention. So now you've got to find a source of inspiration. The Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters. God said, let there be light. That's illumination. You got to learn something you didn't know so you can see something you couldn't see. Do you see what happens when we when we see God's not just, he's not just, well, I just happened to do this. No. He's showing us what to do. And then he took time to see what he had created, and then he recognized that it was good. See, some of us, we'll go do all this really great stuff, and then we won't even take time to enjoy what we've created. You're not even being like God. Okay, y'all tracking. So it gets more better. So here it is, Genesis chapter 1. I'm going to show y'all where I got this from. Genesis chapter numero uno. Here we go. Here's what it says. When God created man, I'm going to just go down to that part. Here's what it says. Verse 26. And God said, let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the fowl of the air, and over the cattle, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that moveth upon the earth. So God created man in his own image, and the image of God created him, male and female created he them. So, and God blessed them, and said unto them, be fruitful, and multiply, replenish the earth, and subdue it, and have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the fowl of the air, and over every living thing that moveth upon the earth. Okay, so, here's the first thing we see. And God said, it's really interesting. So if you go back and read Genesis chapter 1, what you'll see it says, and God said, Genesis 1, I think it's verse 3, and God said, let there be light. Maybe it's verse 4. And God said, let there be light, right? Okay. When God created creation, he said, let there be. Let there be light. Let there be a firmament that separates the waters from the waters. So when God created creation, there's three categories. There's creation, there's creatures, and there's creators. When God created creation, he said, let there be. When God created creatures, he said, let the earth bring forth and let the waters bring forth. Let the earth bring forth the cattle and the creeping things. Let the water bring forth the fish and the fowl. What is God doing? He's delegating some of the work that he did to something that he's already created. So we could call that delegation. We could call that automation. Right? Are y'all tracking? So that you're not doing everything. Okay. So y'all tracking. Okay. Now, but when he created man, he didn't say, let there be man. That shows us that man is not a higher form of animal. He didn't say, let the earth bring forth man. He didn't say, let the waters bring forth man. So we know that man is very, very different than creation, and he's very, very different than creatures. How do we know that? Because what God said when he created them was different. When he created creation, he said, let there be. When he created creatures, he said, let the waters bring forth, let the earth bring forth. When he created man, here's what he said, let us. Let us make man in our image. What's he saying? I'm about to do something different, y'all, than everything I've already done. I saved the best for last. It's about to be on, y'all. Okay, now, God said, let us make man in our image. You know what that means? Before God could say, let us make man in our image, the image had to exist first. That's why imagination is the highest level, because it represents God. It's the God realm. God said, there's the communication. By the way, could God have made man in his image without saying it? Yes, he could have. But he said it. Why? Because that's part of our creative power, is to create messages that move us. and messages that move others. Here's what the scripture says. A man shall eat good by the fruit of his mouth. Death and life are in the power of the tongue, and they that love it shall eat the fruit thereof. Thou shalt also declare a thing, and it shall be established, where? Unto thee. I'm not talking about speaking things into existence. You can't do that. I can't do that. Only God could do that. That's a bara. The only person in Scripture who baras is God. But what I can do is I can talk to myself like David did when he did what? Encouraged himself in the Lord. How do you encourage yourself in the Lord? Say the same thing to yourself that God said to you about you. When I speak God's word to me, guess what I'm doing? I am installing faith into a space where doubt used to exist so I can take an action in faith that I could not take in doubt. How many of y'all track it? Why? How do I know that? Because faith cometh by hearing, and hearing by what? The word of God. So the best thing I can do for me is to say the same thing about me that God says about me. Because when I see myself like he sees me, now I can do what he says I can do and not what other people say I can't do. Are y'all tracking? And this is where I got the four levels of value, right? So when we're working at those highest levels, we're working that imagination realm. Then we start communicating, we're working that communication realm. But God didn't say, let me make man in my image. What did he say? Let us make man in our image. That's the unification part. Two are better than one, and a threefold cord is not quickly broken. Are y'all, this is so powerful for, the money is nothing more than proof that you've created the value. The wealth is the value that you create for someone other than yourself. And if you create enough value for enough other people, there's nothing in this world that you desire that you can't have. Now, and maybe that's not even what you want. There's nothing in this world that I desire that I don't already have. So somebody commented on one of my videos, somebody commented on one of my videos, they said, but you can't take it with you. And I can't take the lot I got with me, you can't take the little you got with you. We ain't taking none of it with us. That's first. But I said, I have neither the desire nor the inclination to take any of it with me. I'm not working to take it with me. I'm working so that I can keep contributing to the charities and the ministries that I contribute to, and so that I can leave the rest to my children, my children's children. I have no intention of taking it with me. I can send some ahead, and I can leave the rest here. I have no desire to take any with me. Myron, how much money do you want to make? As much as I can. How much wealth do you want to create? As much as I can. But wealth is not the money. Wealth is the value that I create for someone other than me. Okay, I gotta finish. The last thing it says, Genesis chapter 2, because I didn't realize Larry didn't tell me that I was getting ready to go overtime, but that's okay. It's okay. Now I know who I'm dealing with. Okay. Larry's my dude. Here's what it says, Genesis chapter 2, verse 7. And the Lord God formed man of the dust of the ground, breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and the man became a living soul. I'm going to finish with this. God formed. What is that? That's the implementation. The last thing God did was made the physical part of man. Then what did he do? He breathed into his nostrils the breath of life. The man that he made in his imagination with his communication, patterned after his unification, he breathed that man into the body that he formed. And the man became a living soul. That's why I call these the four levels of value. Now y'all know where I got it from in Genesis chapter 1. By the way, it's confirmed in Genesis chapter 11. The people in Babel were trying to build a tower whose top could reach heaven. Do you know how ridiculous that sounds in a day where they don't have hydraulics, they don't have helicopters, they don't have cranes? But here's what it says. The Lord God came down to see the tower and the sun, the city and the tower which the sons of men builded. And he said, this people is one, that's unification. They all have one language, that's communication, and one speech. Now this they begin to do, that's implementation. Now nothing will be restrained from them, which they've imagined to do. There are the four levels of value. If you apply these four levels, even working on something that's not good, it will still work. That's how powerful it is, because it's a principle, and principles are God's automation. So let's make sure we apply the four levels of value to something good and not to something evil. I hope that blesses you. Thank you for subscribing. By the way, next Friday, which is the 9th, I think, of June, I am going to be doing a giveaway for subscribers. So you want to subscribe to my YouTube channel. If you haven't already, you want to subscribe to the channel because we're going to be picking some subscribers. You want to subscribe publicly so people know, so we can pick from the people who subscribe, and we're going to pick somebody, and we're going to be doing a giveaway. I'm not going to tell you what the giveaway is right now, but I'll tell you on the Bible study here that's coming up in a few minutes. All right, bye for now.
Coffee and Ethiopia are so related. Some people say it's a way of showing love to one another. While I was growing up too, we see coffee as socializing between neighbors, living in the neighborhood. They gather around coffee to have a cup of coffee. Usually they don't have one cup, they have three cups.
Ethiopia and coffee are intertwined. The country prides itself as being the birthplace of coffee, roughly discovered in the 9th century. The coffee origin story strongly influenced the culture, traditions, and methods of how coffee is made throughout the country.
There is a common legend which everybody knows about the goat herder who found out that his goats were acting differently from before. He was herding his goats in the Kaffa Mountains, so he followed them what they were eating to be so active and so hyper. He found out that they were having reddish berries, and once they tasted that, they became so energetic and they jump around. At that time, there was a monastery nearby. So he went with the berry, tell them what happened. The abbot at first wasn't excited, so he threw it in the fire. They roasted it unintentionally. He saw the aroma of the smell of the coffee. He had to try it. So they washed it and so they tried it. That's why we started the coffee.
Originally, it's traditional coffee in Ethiopia.
One in a million.
Okay. Oh, man. Fighting sleep here. It stayed up most of the night. Anyway, wealth-defined, turn a liability into an asset, part 5. All right, tomorrow, now what we're going to do is, on our program notes right here on Blog Talk, I've got like the 10 types of wealth. Time wealth, social capital wealth, mental, physical health, I count those as one. Skills wealth, natural resources wealth, energy wealth, space wealth, or spatial wealth, storage wealth, and housing wealth. The others, but those are, I would consider, 10 basic fundamental types or distinctions of wealth. The definition of wealth I have is it's a valuable resource. A viable resource, and that could be a subjective way of looking at it, or a valuable economic resource. Right? Like if you're a carpenter and you got a saw and a hammer, that saw and that hammer represents part of your wealth. And if you make tables or chairs or whatever, your ability to do that is your skill set wealth, you know. So we'll go over those tomorrow. Now, tomorrow, what we're going to do is David Patrick, he has we're going to fill out our $1 million a year income worksheet. We're going to fill that out tomorrow. You can go to his website and get that just go there and download it. It's absolutely free. Tomorrow, we're going to fill it out. You're welcome to join us. And on that note, have a good rest of the day.
morning people wake up for peace and quiet. McDonald's breakfast people, we wake up for the sweet rush of getting that warm, delicious breakfast right before it ends.
Crush your morning goals with a steak, egg, and cheese bagel or any breakfast sandwich and snag another one for just a buck with the buy one, get one deal. Only in the McDonald's app. Limited time only at participating McDonald's. Valid once per day. Must opt into rewards.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.